What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Stretch Goose Podcast. I'm Manuel, and hopefully you are enjoying your morning, your Thursday morning. Hope it's awesome. Hopefully you're getting to work on time. Hopefully you're, and if you're off, hopefully you're sleeping, shit. Getting all your rest in for the big work week ahead. That's a little weird thing to say. I shouldn't have said that because you still got Friday, and we're not there yet. But if you're off, maybe you're off Thursday and Friday, getting ready for your week, which starts on Saturday. That's a possibility, too. I mean, not everybody works Monday through Friday. A lot of people work, you know, a Sunday, Monday off, Monday, Tuesday off, Wednesday, Thursday off. You know how I know this is because when I'm working, I see a lot of grown adults wandering the earth, and I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, do they have a job? Do they have an actual fucking job? I mean, I don't know, and I'm not going to sit there and interrupt them, but, you know, who knows when your day actually, your week actually starts? Who knows when that hump day actually is? Who knows when it's 2 days to the first day of the week of work for you? I mean, who knows? But wherever you are in life, hopefully you're here to enjoy this, and this is part two of the of the TikTok refugees that love China. And apparently I missed it, but a few days ago, TikTok went back online. So when I was playing those videos yesterday about a bunch of people in the band and all that stuff, I guess that was out of the timeline, and I apologize for that. So I'm allowed to correct myself, but I guess TikTok has entered into an agreement for a temporary extension until a more permanent solution can be had out here in America. Now, that's brought a whole bunch of conspiracy theories out there, but one that I actually kind of believe is that Donald Trump did this on purpose so he can gain credit for it later. It's a political move. I'm not mad at it. I don't give a shit that much about TikTok, but I'm also not mad at it. And of course, for all of you right-wingers out there that are on TikTok complaining about how it's a communist app that steals your information and your soul and everything else, the only question I have for you is, why are you on it? Why are you on it? Most notably, Ben Shapiro mentioned it, saying that he has like 60 million likes and 2.5 million followers, and he produces TikTok content. And then he says it's a Chinese government op to steal data and your soul and your third baby or whatever the fuck. And I'm thinking in my head, you know, if that app does that much shit, what are you doing on it, Ben? Unless you're trying to, you know, convert people. No idea. But let's get crazy here. I'm gonna play another one of those clips, if you will.
For my Chinese friend, I just want to tell you some discussions Americans are having right now. All of us agree and are astounded at how...
First off, this video is another young ticker talker convert to Red Note giving her experience. And if I had to put a number on it, she's probably 21, maybe.
Cheap and affordable your groceries, housing, and cars are. I have been watching you guys' grocery haul videos, and it is blowing my mind. America could never. A lot of us also cannot believe how advanced your country is, because we were always shown and told that you guys were a third world, like, starving country. That's just not the case. The fact that 95% of you guys own homes is mind-boggling. It is, like, seriously almost impossible to own a home anywhere in the U.S. You have to work immensely hard. How about y'all's law school is like $800 a year, and I think that your homeless rate is like 0.18%. I have people living in outside of tents outside of my building. Like, it's terrible here. What? I saw somebody say earlier that a cancer medication that they get is about $20 in China, and they are paying $22,000 a month in the U.S. for that same medication. What? A lot of you guys were also thinking that it's propaganda, that our kids sometimes, if they can afford it and their parents want to, will put them in a bulletproof like backpack to go to school. They also do stand up and do the Pledge of Allegiance every single day before class starts. This whole experience might just be the most awake and united I think I've ever seen this country. We are pissed at our government, number one. Number two, astounded. Absolutely astounded.
We're going to play that video back again and kind of piece through it in the part two of this little China thing. She talks about the affordability of China, and if you listen to yesterday's episode, you know why that is. But to kind of give you a brief overview, the reason things are affordable is because the cost of living is dirt. And why is the cost of living dirt out in China? Because they don't pay anybody anything. The government owns everything, and they bleed you dry through taxation. And, of course, they have unions owned by the Communist Party government, and they set the market. Which then leaves you with less than pennies on the dollar for your paycheck to go actually buy these cheap goods. And they are cheap solely because of the undercutting of the competition by way of taxation through tariffs and the value added tax system. Now, of course, that is my layman's understanding of this whole thing. But if you are a smart person out there, by all means, drop a comment down below and try to explain this to me. You know, I'm open to learning about it. But as far as I can tell, that is what this is. And knowing that they tax as high as 50-60%, even on the lowest end, all for your universal health care, as they love to say. But let's dive into education, because law school is $800, right? This is from Global Post. And I'm going to go through this kind of similar to yesterday, simply because it's worth the read. For the second time, Shanghai has just topped the charts of the program for international student assessment program, a benchmark standardized test covering reading, science, and math skills for 15-year-olds in dozens of countries over a three-year period. While China should be recognized for its achievements in Shanghai and in raising basic literacy across the country, these high scores obscure an important fact. China's education system is deeply unequal and is failing students with disabilities. For a start, Shanghai is atypical of China, where half of the people live in the countryside and children attend underfunded and struggling schools. Even in Shanghai, hundreds of thousands of migrant children often have difficulties accessing public schools because of China's outdated hukou system. Guys, I'm going to completely botch a lot of these Chinese pronunciations, and I like to start off with a massive apology. Moving on. Requiring official permission to establish a new residency and access to public services. In addition, a large proportion of Chinese students, those with disabilities, are denied the chance to even go to public school because of discrimination and exclusion. Indeed, according to official estimates, 1 in 4 children with disabilities are not in school at all. So, we all bitch about our education system in America. We all bitch about how things are run in America. We all bitch about our capitalistic society. In China, they don't let everybody go to school. If you have a disability, if you have some kind of a problem, you know, physically, the chances of you getting accepted and or selected to go to school doesn't exist. So those test scores don't exist. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, China has a two-track system, one for children with disabilities and one with those without disabilities, from primary school through university. Theoretically, children with disabilities can join mainstream education as long as they are able to adapt to the life of the school. So in America, we try to make those with disabilities comfortable and adapt to what they can and cannot do. In China, it's fuck you. You better figure it out. Do you see how sad that is? That's a little weird. Official guidelines even allow universities to deny enrollment in certain subjects if the applicants have disabilities. In August, a university denied an applicant who uses crutches to programs in medicine and psychology, even though he meets the academic requirements, because his physical disabilities do not match his chosen subjects. Because he needs assistance to walk, they did not allow him to be a fucking doctor or, in psychology. Over here, you could be in a wheelchair and be a psychologist. In China, you can't do it. Kind of weird. Students with disabilities have repeatedly tried to access education, but these efforts have largely been in disappointment. They are turned away from mainstream schooling because they may affect other children or they simply cannot learn. That in and of itself, guys, is grounds for not even going to China. Don't even put your kids over there. This is insane. So they are saying that you have a disability. You can't go there because not only are you going to have trouble learning, but you are overwhelmingly going to affect those who can learn through distraction and all these things. In our country, the one that everybody seems to fucking hate all the time, we try to put those with disabilities together in one room so that they all can learn at the same pace and or within that space. Over there, they don't do that. And they don't want you near the good kids because you might fuck them up. If I was a parent in China and I had known of that, I would be sad that my child is not getting help. In America, you get help. Now, mind you, you might have to, fill out some forms and protest or whatever it is that you got to do, write a couple of letters in some cases to get certain things, but you do have the opportunity to get them. China, according to what I've been looking at over the last week, you don't have that. You just don't. Of course, blind students who have been educated in special education schools have fought the government for years for an accessible version. I skipped a paragraph. I apologize, guys. We'll back this bitch up. Even if they are initially admitted, some are later dismissed within a few months. Blind students who have been educated in special education schools have fought the government for years for an accessible version of Gaokao. I don't even know what that is. The all-important university entrance exam in the mainstream education. Oh, okay. So if you're blind, you don't even get that test. Wow. Okay. So if you're a blind dude with a 300 IQ, you don't get to take the state exam because you're blind. That's some bullshit. Their efforts have been denied along with access to Chinese universities. Chinese laws do not clearly stipulate what constitutes discrimination, so there is little effective recourse for those who confront this kind of systemic exclusion. The Chinese government has signed and ratified the Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which requires states provide an inclusive education to accommodate diverse learning needs. So because of most of the pushback, they've put up a quote-unquote law that they aren't mandated to follow in any state. in any of the Chinese states. So educators in these schools get almost no training, funding, or support to effectively teach students with disabilities. Because of the lack of government assistance, schools often turn away students with those disabilities. Some students with disabilities find mainstream schools so difficult that they have no choice but to eventually leave simply because there is zero accommodation for people with disabilities, whether it be learning or physical. Got to keep this in mind. The education system is skewed in China. You look at the board and they go, oh my gosh, a lot of these Asian countries, China in particular, is usually in the top, you know, 20, top 50 in a lot of categories. And in this particular exam over the last few years, this exam here that is reported over the last, you know, the PISA exam, they are top 5. But then when you dive deeper into it, you find out that they only report those that pass. And they only report those that are actually in school. Everybody else, go fuck yourself. So they basically are hiding the data. They are hiding the scores. They are hiding things from you. So when this lady is over here talking about, oh my God, it looks so beautiful out there, what I want her to understand, and many of you youngsters that are making these videos, ask that person to go for a fucking walk into the worst part of the city. Show me the homeless person. Show me the disabled person that can't go to school. Show me the education system where they're not all clapping in unison. Show me the parts where it's garbage. And that those parts that are garbage is overwhelming in China. It is a bigger piece of the pie that the government continues to hide from anybody. Think about COVID. Do you really think out of billions of people, they only lost less than 1 million? Those numbers don't add up. Those infection rates don't make sense. Everybody knows, and now it's coming out, that they misrepresented data in China over COVID, and they misrepresent the data in their education system. These guys hide everything. And everybody is walking around talking about how awesome they are. Even yesterday when I went over the way they handle the workforce, there's no workman's compensation. There's no recourse for the pollution rates, the safety rates. They don't even fucking give a shit. But these guys are sitting there like, oh my God, it's so awesome over there. No. Now, let's get to this part of the video where she's talking about housing. Oh my God, 95% of the public owns their own home? Let's dive in, kids. There's several articles that I'm going to run through. First one is Forbes. And we are definitely going to get in. First one is Forbes, for sure. And then we're going to get into interestingengineering.com, the article they have there. So, stick with me, guys, because I am going to go through this shit as word for word as these articles are, because it's very important that you guys get all of this information that I'm about to send your way. So, I was surprised when the owner of the rundown 82 square meter apartment, now, I don't know the conversions on this, because everything in this is metrics outside of the dollar. So I don't know why Forbes did this. So if you know what 82 square meters are, good for you. I don't. Of the core downtown area of Xiamen that I once rented told me that he was selling it for $300,000. The apartment was in a well-worn 15-year-old building, old in a country where housing only lasts for 25 to 30 years, and had grime covering the walls, tiles from the kitchen, floor that was peeling up, water oozing up from the shower drain, and fixtures that were all mismatched. This dilapidated at that, although at $22,000 RMB per square meter, I couldn't say that this place was priced abnormally high. This is just what people pay for homes in East China. An average 80 square meter apartment within Shanghai's Inner Ring Road goes for $886,000 US, while in the city's hinterlands, it sells for around $200,000. In Beijing, the average cost of a home of the size of this size is $310,000 US. This is all in a country where $5 can get you a bulging armful of food from the local market, and $70 gets you a bunk on a train that's going all the way across the country. According to the IMF's house price wage ratio, China has 7 of the world's top 10 most expensive cities for residential property. All through their country's tier 1, tier 2, and even some tier 3 cities, housing prices are severely out of proportion with the incomes of the people who live there. This is the same problem that most areas in the United States are facing. Wage and housing are not in line. You're getting that here in China. But all the youngsters think it's awesome. Moving on. In Xiamen. I hope I got that right. A coastal city with a perpetually hot property market, $300,000 for an apartment is normal, even though the minimum wage is hardly $200 a month and the average wage is around $1,000. Even for the city's middle class residents who make somewhere between $1,200 and $5,000 a month, the price seemed prohibitively high. However, the people of China can afford to buy these extremely expensive properties. In fact, 90% of families in the country own their own home, giving China one of the highest home ownership rates in the world. What's more is that 80% of these homes are outright owned, like 80% of that 90%. Or in her case, it's now 95%. They own 100% without a mortgage or any other liens. On top of this, north of 20% of urban households own more than one home, according to the Nomura. So with wages so out of whack with real estate pricing, how can so many people afford to buy these houses? Before we can understand how people in China can afford to frolic in their country's overinflated markets, we must look at where this market came from. 20 years ago, China's real estate market didn't exist. It wasn't until the mid-90s that a series of reforms allowed urban residents to own and sell real estate. People were then given the option to purchase their previously government-owned homes at extremely favorable rates and the ability to buy homes of their choice. So, excuse me again. So the market is extremely inflated. Like, extremely inflated. And nobody's making money. So if I were one of these Tiki Talkers that talks how awesome it is over there, and I were to go live there because it's the best futuristic fucking city ever, I would know that just on the income alone of making $5,000 a month, there's no way I can afford an $886,000 house and on my own. So it makes you wonder, how are they buying these things? 100%, right? So let's dive in. Okay, when we talk about how people afford houses in China today, more often we are not talking about individuals going out and buying property on their own, as in the general modus operandi of the West. No, we're talking about entire families and friend networks who financially assist each other in the pursuit of housing. At the inner circle of the social network is often the parents of the home buyer. When a young individual strikes out on their own, lands a decent job, and begins looking to pursue marriage, getting a house is often an essential part of the conversation. owning a home is virtually a social necessity for an adult in China and is often a major part of the criteria for evaluating a potential spouse. As parents tend to move into their children's homes in old age, this truly is multi-generational. So parents will often fork over a large portion of their money to their children with an adequate house, oftentimes buying it years in advance. If parents are not financially able to buy their houses outright, they will generally help with a heavy down payment, or at the very least provide access to a social network to borrow money. So none of these fuckers got the money. So they pull their money together. The parents who have lived a little bit and have the extra cash tend to be the major backer of these purchases. That's how they're buying these houses. No one's walking in 100%. It takes at least 10, 15, 20 people in China to buy one fucking house. In America, I know it sucks. I know no one agrees with how it's run. But if you could come up with at least $5,000 to $10,000 of your own money, you could borrow the rest on a 30 to 40 year loan, and you can live there for however long you can afford to live there. In China, nobody can afford to do that, so they do come together as a single unit, and they all fucking live in the house. That's how they're pulling this magic trick off. So when they tell you they own the house, 90, 95% home ownership, what they are not telling you is that none of them own that thing 100%. It is a collective that owns that house. So if you're one of these tiki talkers that talks about how great it is on Red Note and China is showing us the world, none of these fuckers would want to live with their mom, their dad, their sister, their brother, their grandma, their grandparents, their third cousin, their fourth cousin, their cousin, their kids of those cousins. And there's 10, 15, 20 people in that house. None of these guys would fucking dream to do that, knowing that they own a tenth of the home themselves. So what's crazy is, to decrease the amount of volatility in China's often hot market, there are very strict rules as to how much money people can borrow from a bank that the government owns for purchasing real estate, although this slightly varies by city and waivers in response to current economic conditions. For their first home, a buyer must lay down 30%. The bank won't talk to you unless you come out with 30% up front in China. Over here, 3 to 5%, and you could kind of get it going. There, 30%. If you're buying a second home and they know you own a first home, 60% is the down payment. You got to find that fucking money. And for any property beyond this, financing isn't available. So for people to buy homes in this country, they need to step up to the table with a large amount of cash on hand. In fact, 15% of all residential properties in China is paid for all up front by the collective. Why there is so much liquid cash available for these relatively large down payments is straightforward. The Chinese are some of the best savers in the world. In fact, with a rate savings that equates to 50% of its GDP, China has the third highest such rate in the world. As almost a cultural mandate, the Chinese stash away roughly 30% of their income. So one of the things we don't do in America, and this is why we all cry on the internet, is we don't do that. We don't even attempt 10% of our income in a savings account. In China, even if they make $3 an hour, they know $1.50 goes to the government. Then they know that 50 cents will go to their savings. That gives them $1 an hour a day to exist. That's a hard life. I don't care how happy they make it sound. We just don't do that in America. What we do is we spend everything. We save absolutely nothing. We have all these amazing toys in our house. And then when we're 65, we're trying to figure out how to live beyond our jobs, because we're getting to that point. that's the only thing I think China has us on, is they are notorious for saving money to do the very things that we bitch about not being able to do. So, once the down payment is accounted for, getting mortgages in China is a relatively straightforward affair, and the standards for qualifying are relatively low. For the most part, a borrower's monthly salary must be at least twice the monthly repayment rate of the loan. Interest rates hover around 6% on average. Those who have these loans will devote between 30 to 50% of their monthly income towards paying it back. Why do they get to do that? Because there's other people in the house that are going to have a job to pay everything else. It's a collective affair in China for home ownership. It's something that they are not telling you. So, here's the company that is handling these things. There are 687 cities in China, and the real estate sector accounts for a whopping 29% of those cities of the country. There are about 687 cities in China, and the real estate sector accounts for a whopping 29% of the country's total GDP. However, the Chinese real estate market has also been grabbing a lot of media attention lately due to the $300 billion debt crisis of one of their real estate companies, Evergrande. What a name. But this is not the only big problem the housing market is facing. A recent report reveals about 20% of the total urban housing property in China, 65 million homes, are vacant. This 20% includes large sections of cities like Tai'an, Duxing, Thamestown, Binhai, and many others, which span across hundreds of square kilometers, but have far more empty buildings than occupied. Such ghost cities in China have well-connected roads, infrastructure, skyscrapers, and a variety of public spaces, but are vastly underpopulated and have vast areas that are completely without residents. Can you imagine that? It's so awesome over there. They built so much. Nobody lives in them because they already own their homes. And this company, this real estate construction business, has so much debt on the books. They have a huge problem getting that stuff paid because no one's buying it. You want to live in that country? Do you really, guys? Is it really awesome over there? Come on now. It's ridiculous. Real estate. Let's continue. Real estate was once a sector where investment was considered safe and profitable in China. Even the Chinese government encouraged investments in property because for decades, the real estate market and its more or less continuously rising prices were a key driver in increasing country wealth as well as household income. The communist government accumulates sales revenue worth billions of dollars from land sales and the earnings of the property market. And the reason behind this real estate-driven economy lies in the country's constitution. According to the Chinese constitution, all the land in China is owned by the government. So they're going to want to keep building and selling because they get paid. It's a financial grift, and they don't give a shit what goes on. That's what's crazy. So when developers want to build on some land, they have to lease it from the government. They don't even own the land. It's a lease, often by participating in local land options. Another reason for the previous uncontrolled growth of the real estate market in China is that compared to the people living in the U.S. and Europe, far fewer Chinese citizens invest in the stock market. In the U.S., 52% of the U.S. population own stock, and around 65% own property, while in China, only 7% own stock. 90% own the home. 70% of that, 70% of millennials are in there as well, with many planning on buying additional investment properties. This speculation of investment properties is also why real estate holdings in China account for a big share of total household wealth. Around 70% of household assets are real estate. it's a paper tiger, guys. That's the best way I can put it. They have a real estate market that is producing vacant cities. And there's no one to fucking buy it. And it's an inflation of its wealth. At some point, someone's going to call in the debt and China's going to have to figure it out. I would not live there. I would not want to be a part of that. And especially during COVID when they welded the doors shut to keep you in for their wacky ass population control. I don't know, man. I just don't know what to, I just don't know why everybody's buying into it. I just don't. But here are the famous ghost cities in China. There's the Roman Ska. The real estate culture in China not only escalated infrastructure development, but also drastic change in population distribution. According to a report from the World Bank, more often 60% of China's 1.4 billion now reside in cities. However, there are many cities in China that are hoping for people. The Paris of China, which is Tian Duchin, popular among couples for wedding shoots, the city of Tian Duchin, located about 2 hours west of Shanghai, was constructed to resemble a miniature Paris. But to support the population of 10,000, the town includes a 300-foot Eiffel Tower, gray Parisian facades, cobblestone streets, Renaissance fountains. But nobody lives there. Built in 2007, by 2013, the city only had 2,000 residents, and at that time, it was being referred to as a ghost town. However, recent reports revealed that at present, there are more than 30,000 people that live there, and the city's population is heading upward. And, of course, you have the Diamond Metropolis that also includes nobody. It was called it's been known to most as a failed utopia. There's more ghost towns out there, and to kind of sum up the Evergrande thing, their liquidity problem was revealed in a big supply demand gap in China's housing market. Many experts believe that if Evergrande fails, it may not bring a global economic crisis like the one that followed the other housing collapse of the Lehman Brothers in 2008, but it would give a severe blow to other property companies in China and affect the country's thriving real estate culture. With this just sounds like it kind of sounds like that Bernie Madoff thing. You know, to me, of course, if you guys disagree, leave me a comment down below. Tell me what you think. But it just feels like a giant Bernie Madoff situation. I don't know, guys. Once again, thank you all for listening, subscribing, jumping on, being a part of this journey. As I'm approaching the completion of the third week of this year, I once again want to thank all the new subscribers. I want to thank everybody that's jumped on and giving me a chance. Be sure to keep sharing the show with your friends. Like it, share it, subscribe to it. And I hope that this turns into a thing. See you guys for happy Friday. Later.